Launch all sequence has started.
Crew one for all.
Welcome to Moon Snacks. I'm joined by my co-pilot, my kindred spirit, Ed Hoffman.
It's a chance to talk with really interesting, fascinating, good people, and we get to send them to the moon for a reason we've never completely figured out. But I assume eventually we'll end up on the moon. And of course, the movies are a great way to really understand who we are, right, as people. When you identify with a movie, it says something about ourselves. So it's great to be back, and it's great to be heading towards getting ready to send another great person to the moon.
And on their journey to the moon, through the movies that they choose, we learn a little bit about who they are and what they do. And because we're not sadists, we're actually quite nice people, we do allow people three movies, a snack of their choice, and a book.
Neat.
This week, we have Miri Berger. Miri, welcome. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Miri, I've heard wonderful things about you, only from Jessica.
So it's all bias and, ignore it.
Correct.
I'm so excited to have you on because we've had a lot of people, a lot of guests, but we haven't had an entrepreneur yet. And you're doing something that's so interesting and so fascinating with your company, Six Degrees. Miri is co-CEO and founder of Six Degrees. Six Degrees is such an interesting company that uses innovative technology to allow people's movement to thrive. The application can be applied to many different areas, including rehabilitation, but it's really about the mind-body connection and using visualization. So, Miri, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. And I always knew this day would come, get sent to the moon. What we do is in the technology side, we've developed technology initially aimed allowing independence for people that have lost their fine motor skills, use of their hands. The way that we do that is we developed technology that embedded in a hardware device, in a wearable band. You can think of a smartwatch where you can put it on your wrist, your upper arm, your leg, or a prosthetic. And what it does is it learns about the user's motion of that limb or extension of the limb, analyzes it in 5 minutes, and then after that 5 minutes, compare it to anything smart, any computer, phone, tablet, and basically replace the need of using their hands with their motion. Our aim is to kind of allow people to use whatever motion they have, whether it has tremor or limited motion and range, involuntary motion, or any different kind of character of motion, to use whatever they have to control smart devices. So it kind of fixes things on the way in.
It sounds a bit like magic, Miri. Can you tell me, because I know you have a design background. So how did you end up doing this?
I studied for 10 years. My fascination has been making things, so material engineering, material manufacturing, and industrial design. And my teachers kid around that I used to do things with my hands, and now I want other people to do things with their hands. It's just an extension of the same thing. But basically, I learned everything from plastics engineering through ceramics and glass blowing, then worked as an apprentice for a master stonemason. And then following that, which was like basically half the week doing getting architectural designs and making sure the right materials are used to kind of, cover the museum or a hotel or whatever it is they were building. And half the week was physical labor, being a mason, and then basically sending large baths to Italy made of basalt and mountains. And then after that, I went to my master's degree at Pratt University in Brooklyn, doing industrial design.
I see all the most brilliant, incredible, wonderful people come from Brooklyn. That's what I've been telling you for decades, Jessica. Yeah, it's a cool place.
Yeah, it's a hard knock. So I ended up running a small design consultancy before deciding myself, my husband, our two kids, and the pieces of luggage we own, we're going to come back to Israel and open a company.
I feel bad sending you to the moon because you're clearly brilliant. And the work you're doing really has incredible purpose. I'm a big believer in the importance of mission. Oliver Berkman's written things on meditations, I think, for mortals, and Carl Jung termed the thing of the life task. The life task means each of us has a sense of purpose. And if we find it, then we contribute to larger society, but we all have total meaning. And with what you're doing, it just has amazing impact for society.
I love the metaphor of, if you ever been asked how can you move a beach? The answer is everybody grabs a grain of sand and walks. I think the mission is to just have everyone grab a grain of sand, and the more people you can get to do that, I think the better kind of landscape you build. So,
Miri, before we jump on to talking about films, what is, because it's such a wide application, like, and actually, like, implications for the device and the way people use it. When you guys started this company, do you have a hope in mind that you're working towards?
Yeah, if I can go into the story of how we started a little bit. I actually run the company with my husband, who's my co-founder. He's also the CTO of a company. He got injured as a paratrooper in the army. And we're both kids of our families. Like, my father, his grandfather served in the U.S. as well, and we did in Israel. So anyway, he got injured in the army, and with the connection to all these doctors and the family on my end, it ended up being an introductions initially to, you know, ways you can, surgery that you can have to deal with the injury, and then it's rehabilitation. Throughout that process, we kind of narrowed the things that people deal with into two. One is people want to regain independence. Yesterday they could do something, and today it's harder, or they have to think about it or put more effort into it. And two is reduction of pain, because pain is something that people deal with in a long-term recovery. And so our hope, starting the company, was to give people more independence. The way that we could do that is through digital interaction, so we can give people more independence, either using a smart device to study or to just order food online by themselves. And then on the flip side, we also learned that when you're in something like an interaction where you're using a limb that's not functioning as much as it should because it's injured, so typically people favor that side. They don't use it as much if it hurts. And so through engaging that side more and more with the gaming and activity, people can strengthen and learn about their motion, but also we've learned that it can reduce pain. So what we've been doing is using it to reduce pain for amputees through gaming.
Let's jump in. I'm also reluctant to send Miri to the moon now. We need her on Earth. But yeah. Miri, what would the first movie you take be to keep you company?
I was like starting with the first thing first. And the first thing for me was Bugs Bunny.
I love it.
As a child, any chance we got to pop in a VHS tape of Bugs Bunny, Roadrunner in the TV would be grabbed. And the more cousins or brothers and sisters that we can get on the couch to watch it, the more fun it was. And so the first movie with Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner came out close to the 80s, I think in 79.
The Roadrunner. Marvin the Martian. Thank you. Pepe Le Pew.
It is love at first sight, is it not?
Wile E. Coyote. Elmer Fudd. And the one and only Bugs Bunny.
Am I a stinker? You're despicable.
Created by animation great Chuck Jones and brought to life by the many talents of Mel Blanc.
Genius! Cheer!
Who in that story were you rooting for?
For Wild E. Coyote. I always was impressed by his ingenuity and engineering skills. Funny anecdote, when I worked with stone carving, we ended up needing to glue stone and glass. So we needed to create a new glue. So we reached out to a company in Germany called Acme. So they sent a representative, and we manufactured our own glue. And the whole entire time I'm sitting there in like big factories with burly men and scientists, all I'm thinking about is, you know, oh, this is probably where the order was placed. So I think I was rooting for Wile E. Coyote as a vegetarian, of course, not to eat him, not to eat the Roadrunner, just to catch him. Bugs is an all-time favorite. I can't say anyone else in the story gets his bravado.
Miri, so tell me, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Ramat Gan in Israel. It's right off Tel Aviv. And you're totally right about the narration. And specifically in the beginning of that movie, I was thinking of taking like Buster Keaton movies or Charlie Chaplin. And when he starts out narrating that movie, then he kind of evokes all of that. I'm like, yeah, that's done. that's who I want to take. I will say that watching Bugs Bunny wasn't on TV available. And when it was dubbed into Hebrew, so I always watched it in English. My dad is an infectious disease specialist, so he traveled a lot for tropical disease lectures and stuff. He would come back with cartoons and later on old movies that were meant to make me cry, and vinyl records. So I kind of grew up listening to the 2,000-year-old man on vinyl.
Do you think at all that there are lessons to be learned from that movie and being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, brushing yourself off and doing it again and looking at it from a different angle. Even Bugs, like, there are episodes where he's not the winner. And then he gets up and does it again.
Bugs is such a foundational part of our, I guess, universal psyche. We grew up in different places, and I felt the same way about him. Ed, do you feel that?
Well, you know that I was, years we talked about one of our good friends, Larry Prusak. We both grew up in Brooklyn, and so we talked about we should do a movie, or we should do a book on growing up, because we would tell people Brooklyn stories. Bugs was the quintessential Brooklyn character. I used to say that there's a few ways you survive in Brooklyn. You can be tough, which I was not. You could be fast, which not fast enough, or you can be funny. He used humor, and that's what he did that. But it's interesting, Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner, two great characters, two successful, but they had different philosophies, right? The Roadrunner, just totally perseverance, very simple, speed, you know, and beeped and moved and drove. And he had a very simple, naturalistic, almost environmental response. And Bug is he's the smart aleck. He's he summarized it in a lot of his cartoons by saying, "Ain't I a stinker?" or "Ain't I despicable?" And, you know, he would leave his enemy sometimes fallen, usually Daffy Duck, and he would have fun with it. But his philosophy was being smarter, working things through, and he almost had a zen to him, I think, right? You know, they would come towards him, he would kind of maneuver around. He was not a violent creature, but he would take that energy and redirect it towards them in different ways.
Have you heard the story while Mel Blanc was in a coma? So he got in an accident on Mulholland Drive, and the voice of Bugs was Mel Blanc, and he ended up in a coma. Everybody was gathering by his side. They didn't know what to do for him. It didn't look good. And one day, the doctor said something like, "Look, Bugs, I don't know what to do for you." And from out of his mouth came Bugs' voice and goes, "What's up, Doc?" And it started activating his mind. And actually, they found if they talked to the characters, it started linking things back, and he became conscious again. So in that is also an example, a little bit, Mary, of what you're learning through Six Degrees, which is the real powerful connection between mind and body. Can you tell us a little bit about just a couple of maybe some of the surprising things you found?
We used it with one of the first two testers. We were designing a game to fit mirror therapy, which is a current treatment to reduce pain for amputees, which is, as it sounds, it's you take a physical mirror, put it in front of a whole leg, and move the whole leg and kind of focus on the reflection on the mirror to convince the brain that the amputated leg behind the mirror is doing the movement. And that's a treatment to reduce pain. That's not us. It's made, taken from there to treat stroke and other things that make you not move as much or cause phantom pain. So we took that and started building games around it, like a soccer game, a music game. And to replace the reflection of a whole leg moving, we would put it on an amputated leg, and you would see that leg moving, not a reflection. So as we were designing the games, we had two strappy young gentlemen who are on the amputee soccer team in Israel, the captain and I think the far right position. They were kind of goading each other throughout the game. 2 days later, we get a phone call from the captain of the team. He's like, "It's really, really upset. He got a yellow card and then a red card in the game, because in amputee soccer, you're not allowed to kick with a prosthetic." And he was convinced, he remembered his leg was there, and so he kicked, and he just got a yellow card and a red card, and he called so upset, and we're so happy on the other side of the phone.
Before we move on from that movie, Ed, who did you identify with in the kind of Looney Tunes world?
Bugs was number one, too. In the world in general, Bugs is one of the strongest identifications. I've loved everything about Bugs, still do. Love the music, love Mel Blanc. I always thought it was kind of a animation version of the Marx Brothers. You know, probably I was more influenced than I even think, because it's a problem-solving approach when you think about it. He never gives up, never gets down. He doesn't get angry at who's coming after him. He takes things and solves it in a variety of bizarre ways. Turn left at Albuquerque. I don't know. He comes up with stuff that no one would even think about. And Yeah, he would have been running the whole place, you know, really quickly. He's engaging people like him. He knows the importance of carrots and food. There's always a party going on. He could sing and dance.
You might end up on the wrong planet, though.
One of the cartoons has Bugs dancing with Daffy. And Daffy wants to be the best. He has to be the best. And the crowd boos him. Bugs is just being Bugs. And one of the things that I've seen seriously about teams and individuals is if you have too much ego, if you want something too much, people pick that up. They pick up that kind of push. Well, as if you bring your own self to it. People really like that kind of authenticity. So
you two are way more sophisticated than I am. I loved Roadrunner. I feel like Roadrunner was like the treat. You wouldn't always get to see him. He had this adorable meep. I lived for getting a glimpse of him.
Not to get into the names, but he broke the fourth wall a lot.
Yes, he did. That's so true.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
He would say, hey, this is just a cartoon.
I love that you'll have that on the moon. I feel like it will give you a lot of joy. So what is the next movie that you'd bring?
Yeah, so the next one I picked was The Sting. I love everything about it. I love the setup. I love the people in the movie before and while they're acting. So before the setup starts and while the setup is going on, they'll like keep talking as the camera moves. Or the scene changes, you'll just get them in the middle of a sentence. Like it's so well structured. It's about community, people working together, kind of recognizing the strengths that you might not, like a polished rock, like something you might not notice otherwise.
Miri, tell the truth. You like it because of Robert Redford.
I just like how like clean cut he is in the movie. The guys I grew up with were always scruffy, short pants, torn shirt. It was really nice to see someone in a pinstripe and, you know, a nice, well-dressed three-piece suit. Something cool about it.
It's a good time for men's fashion. I would agree with you about that. I loved the suits too. I also loved what you said about that sense of camaraderie, because these are all kind of rugged individualists, these grifters. They all have their own thing, but when they need each other. Ed, have you seen it recently? Is it?
You know, this is weird. I was in a hotel. I was turning the different, they had, I don't know, one of the movie channels, and they had The Sting on in its entirety. And that's been probably the first time in 10 years that I've watched it. I just watched the whole thing again. And just brilliant. And so many different levels. One, you know, you talk about the suits, but I like setting movies. And so it takes you to a place that's distinctive and that kind of everyone looks good. And, you know, there's all these different things going on. From the standpoint of teams and society, I believe things come down to the knowledge, the expertise, the smarts, coupled with the relationship, which is the trust. And The Sting is really a movie about both, having the smarts to do something, but who can you trust? And, you know, in the movie, they talk about the fact that it's hard to con a person of integrity because they know where they stand. Yeah, just a brilliant movie.
Yeah, I also like how rounded the characters are. Like, there's no one there that you don't know something about. They're not a backdrop, necessarily. And also, my dad, for pre-med, he had to do study classical music, and he'd never heard classical music at home. And he asked the teacher what's considered a good piece. And the teacher said, well, if you can't hum it, you know, in your head when you finish listening to it, it's not a good piece. So until this day, we can't hear any modern classical music. But basically, that whole movie is something that you can hum it. You're like, you 10 years later, if somebody asks you what the tune for that movie is, you can still hum it in your head. And there's something really cool about that.
You know, that was Scott Joplin, transferred by Marvin Hamlisch. Side story, my mother met Marvin Hamlisch, when I was a child, I was in the band and orchestra and all that kind of stuff, and so she approached Marvin Hamlisch and said, oh, my son's in the band too. She said he was really nice in the band. She said, oh, what does he play? And I played the baritone horn, drums and all that kind of stuff. I said, oh, that's a great instrument, I know it. And I got a little Marvin Hamlisch autograph, and my mom said, he's a very nice boy, nice guy, and all that kind of stuff. So, brilliant music. Yeah, I can hear it now. Da na na na, da na na da.
Yeah. I'm Absolutely. Do you know, I also love the art of introducing characters, I feel like, is lost sometimes nowadays. And I love that they just hint at how they introduce folks. So the opening, you don't see the main character. You're seeing a character almost like the white rabbit that's leading you to the pack. So you see like the shoes walking along the ground and like walking up the stairs. And then before they introduce Paul Newman's character, you're seeing his back. And he's just in a bath. And first you see him like passed out near the side. It's just always surprising. You first think he's going to be in the bed. Then he's like flat passed out against the wall. Then his back's to you. They don't give everything away right away. And how a character enters the scene tells a lot about the character. It's the days of good screenwriting. Miri, thank you so much for picking this one. I loved it. Spoiler alert for folks who haven't seen it. But at the end where Robert Redford doesn't take the money, it's such a good planting and payoff, and it is for the love of the thing. You know, they talked a lot about revenge, how revenge is never worth it, but it seems like a worthwhile thing to do. And I keep on thinking about, Ed, your book, Smart Mission, and Miri, your real sense of mission and your hope for the company, and just what a powerful driver that is. Beyond monetary value of a company, it's really about the mission. And gathering people together and how powerful that is around a mission. Miri, there's one thing I wanted to ask, because throughout the course of that film, I absolutely love the levels of challenge. I mean, so many people are hunting different people down. And then the levels of intrigue about how they're dealing with that challenge. I 100% fell for the FBI situation. I was like, another thing on their plate. And so I'm wondering, as you're developing Six Degrees, can you talk a little bit about some of those challenges that you didn't foresee?
So first, the things you don't foresee, they come up multiple times a day and throughout long periods of time, depending on intensity with a startup. They could be outside forces or how you would react that you don't anticipate in advance because it's a new situation. So it's constant learning, constant challenge. For us right now, the challenges are we've completed clinical trials both in Israel and our ongoing trials with the US VA. And we're starting to build a penetration strategy into the US healthcare market, which, as you know, is very simple. Do we need to step out of the box and go directly to individuals, or just stay on the train and go head on to the regulatory challenges? So that's one challenge, the regulatory pathway. And actually, when we started the company, I did this little course in the New York Public Library. We had the idea before we started the company, and they recommended a book on reimbursement. There is a book in the New York Public Library on reimbursement for dummies. And the thing is that that little booklet sends you to multiple other large books that have a new edition every 6 months or so, every year. And so I was looking at that going, okay, this is a job. For some other superhero, I'm going to stick with what I know. And I keep facing that over and over again. And it gets easier now, a long time ahead of reading that book. It gets easier and easier the more you kind of live in that system. So that's a good way of looking at a challenge. Sometimes time takes care of it. The second is, as someone who came from making stuff, dealing with materials, working with my hands, I had to learn how to speak to other people, pick clothing that is not an overall, red or black, learn how to go to meetings, how to do presentations, how to run a company, do finances, apply to grants. Every time is something new. And I'm the kind of person, because I love tools, that likes to know how things work. And so I'll try and learn as much as about that job as I can. And I start out knowing nothing, and then know enough to ask someone capable to do it instead. And that's still stuck. Like, we still do that every time we encounter a new challenge. If it's how to market, how to do a business plan, how to present to investors, how to apply for FDA, things like that. So it's everything, it comes back, which is, again, a good connection to to bugs.
For folks at home who are listening, who may not, I think, appreciate the enormity of starting a company like this, you not only have the technology and the robust testing of the technology, seeing what the applications are, talking to people who are using the technology, making sure that, you know, you're covering all bases in terms of making it easy to use, making it affordable, making it clinically tested, and finding surprising applications for it, not knowing actually completely the full extent of the impact of the technology. But then you have the regulatory systems working internationally, rolling it out. You have investors. All of this is linked together through story and understanding what stories you're telling different people and how to, as you said, what to wear, how to approach folks, how to talk to folks. But then, you know, Mir, I have to remind people, Miri has to eat and actually be a human and has a family and has children. And but it's an extraordinary, all-consuming call when you have a company like this. And it, you're making such an impact, Miri. It is really impressive. And I was thinking, not to link you too much to Robert Redford, but I was thinking about what was at stake for him and how often he had to understand people's expectations and shift a little bit, not change the story, but decide what parts of the story to share with whom. Do you sometimes feel like that as an entrepreneur, where you're like, oh, next outfit, next plane ride?
The way I feel most natural is reacting under pressure. I feel like I do that. I did that a lot when I was in was doing design, and I do that a lot in the startup. I think that I'm looking at it as one of the future challenges in growing the company, because there is a time where you don't want to do that. And I will have to learn how to not put myself into positions or wait until the pressure is on. And it's really easy to make hard decisions when you have no time. Or no other option. It is really hard to prioritize and make hard decisions and invest in things when you don't have that pressure. And I think that's a skill that I would need to learn. And I see that from stories of other founders, that that's a skill that typically, you know, a muscle when you're early on is not as strong as the company moves. And I see that as one of the things I would need to improve.
You mentioned you come from a family full of doctors, that your dad's an infectious disease specialist who traveled a lot. You currently live in Israel, grew up in Israel, but you went to school in the States. Do you feel like different cultures have different attitudes about health that you are also navigating? Is there an element of that? Or do you feel actually there's a much more common thread than we'd imagine?
People want to feel better. I think the difference in geography is what they expect to receive. So the difference, maybe the Israeli healthcare is access to everybody. A lot of things are paid for. And I might pay $5 to see a private doctor here, $1,500 to see the same person in the U.S., or pay nothing in, let's say, Scotland. And so I think that community, or the way that it's built, brings anticipation from the person who needs healthcare to support them. And I think that's the main difference in a lot of places. And obviously there's process, but it's like the difference between handing in your taxes or getting a driver's license or standing in line to get coffee. There are processes in all of them. It's just how you view the situation that you're in and how much effort you're willing to put into it, kind of. I think that's kind of the difference in the different healthcare systems. And the second is, I think geography plays a big role in access. So even in Israel, there are places where there's one hospital within an hour and a half drive radius. And I think there's four hospitals within a 30-minute radius, where sometimes you can walk. So, and you know, you talk about the U.S., sometimes it's 8 hours. So thinking about getting to that access is a big determinative factor. And that's kind of how I'm looking at the systems.
In addition to this really amazing mix, Miri, what is your third film?
Yeah, so my third film is The Princess Bride. And I can open this behind me and show you a big statue that we got once.
Inconceivable.
And yeah, I just love that movie. It has so many quotable moments. It's such a pure kind of story. You know, as opposed to The Sting, you don't root for the antagonist, but you understand like where he's coming from. You know, you're kind of led through intrigue. Like every kind of, like different kinds of dangers, that some of them are fictional, some of them are real. There's a story in a story in a story. So
grandfather's here.
Can't you tell me I'm sick? He'll pinch my cheek. I hate that.
Maybe he won't.
Hey, how is the sickie? Huh? I brought you a special present.
What is it?
It was the book my father used to read to me when I was sick, and I used to read it to your father. And today, I'm going to read it to you.
Well, it shows the power of story. And it starts with Peter Falk, right? And I think one of his great roles as, I guess, the grandfather or whatever. You know, the grandson doesn't want to hear a story. Doesn't want to hear a story about romance or anything like that. And he uses the power to just create this connection. And not only is the boy into it, but we're into it. You know, okay, Peter, now get us back to the story. So it shows you that the power of how story can take us to so many different places. And it's the ultimate human power.
And as a collector, like, there are so many nuggets in that movie, and I think we spoke about it, Jessica, of, like, things, in the posters in the back, and little nuggets that pop up that the more you watch it, the more you notice them, and it kind of unfolds, so.
Did you see that? Because I had to have someone point that out to me, that in the background of his bedroom, there are posters, there's images that actually link to the story that the grandfather's telling.
That's interesting. You know, I didn't notice that. I've watched that many times. And I have to, well, I'll look at that again and watch that. You know, the lines that they have there and the characters are so brilliant. Even now, I sometimes, you know, can't realize that Mandy Patinkin did that role. Because it does not seem at all like a role for him, but it's brilliant. Yeah. What does he always say?
Iñigo Montoya, you killed my father. Prepare to die. The six-fingered man. You don't even have to draw the fingers. You don't have to look at the man. You know there's a six-fingered man.
It's a movie about love.
No, it's about people being partially dead.
What is that you're ripping?
It's fabric from the uniform of an army officer of Gilder.
Who is Gilder?
The country across the sea. The sworn enemy of Florin. Go! Once the horse reaches the castle, the fabric will make the prince suspect the Gilderians have abducted his love. When he finds her body dead on the Gilder frontier, his suspicions will be totally confirmed.
You never say anything about killing anyone.
I've hired you to help me start a war. It's a prestigious line of work with a long and glorious tradition.
Mir, have you shared that with your kids?
Yeah, we actually, I love so many, like, old movies and shows that we have a standing movie night every week. And we do a Ron Robin, who chooses the movie, and 2-year-old chooses movies too.
Do you think it's important to kind of make up stories?
Yeah, so my oldest, I think from the age of 8 months, she would organize all of her toys in different scenes. I could see the story and the imagination going on in the head without the story being actual words. And yeah, I think stories are powerful. Being Jewish, and my mom's side is Yemenite, all of the Old Testament moves from word of mouth, so from story to story. Reading and writing wasn't permitted a long time ago in Yemen, so they would just tell story. They would just tell it as a story. And I love the accents. I love the there are certain sounds on letters like that sound different when you have a Yemenite saying them or someone from Eastern Europe. So the emphasis on the different letters and kind of the tune or the cadence of the story is important. I love stories. I think they're really important.
Do you have a story for 6 degrees?
Jessica, she's been pushing me to write a story. She's amazing. I actually listened to you talk a little bit about fairy tales and kind of used a bunch of storytelling methodologies and kind of styles into building a story. So we're working on that right now.
In my workplace was NASA, right, for 33 years. NASA's got a brilliant story. They're friends in some ways with Hollywood because, you know, the movies that come out, but it's this notion of the desire to explore, the desire to go someplace that no one has been before, the desire to create new technologies, the desire to have an education to be able to do these things. So it's a natural self-looking kind of a process when you have this powerful story. Obviously with 6 degrees, I'm creating my own stories of what it is, but the importance of having opportunities and not being limited by different factors.
One of my favorite musicals, Into the Woods by James Lapine, music by Sondheim. They always have that riff in it that says, careful the tale you tell, that is the spell. And I think it's so interesting, Mary, because you're in a world where I think you have two stories. You have the story that people are telling you about themselves and their condition. And I think the way your technology interacts with them has a lot to do with the story that they're bringing actually to the table. And how they're going to use it. So in one sense, you're kind of the ultimate listener. And then you have the story that you're putting out there about your company and why you're doing what you're doing. And that is, in a way, the Princess Bride or the Sting, in the sense that you're gathering people to your team and you were getting investors and you're getting partners and you're finding ways to use your technology. And that's the story that you're offering. Ed, I remember you and I had a conversation when I was first hired a long time ago now, when I was at NASA. We talked a lot about this idea of the visible horizon. You and I were talking about how our ability to describe what we're seeing and how we're experiencing things really limits the visible horizon. It's really about what we can take in the story we can create from it. And that really is the only thing that limits us.
You can build it, right? If you can think, absolutely. And that's what the great Olympic athletes do, right? They vision, you know, what they're looking for. Very, very powerful. Yeah.
So before we send you to the moon and you get to do some work with 6 Degrees, what's next?
We started out creating an assistive technology for people who've lost their fine motor skills with disability using your hands. And we've advanced from that to use the same technology paired with gaming with the Meta Oculus glasses to reduce pain for amputees. And then we started thinking VR can be a really good addition or a force multiplier in some treatments. So when you have phantom pain, you have an amputation, you look down in VR, you have full legs. And where else can we give that experience? Two other verticals that we're looking at. One is we're working with people that have stroke paralysis. So one side is affected. Let's say the right or left leg can't move as much, doesn't have as much range. So since the technology translates whatever motion you have, we can in VR show people that they have full range of their leg moving and kind of build trust and get them to use that side more.
What would the outcomes of that be? Like, why would you want to do that for someone?
One is, let's say the feeling after an injury, even if you can move, is if any of you have ever learned how to drive a stick shift. When you start learning how to drive, every motion is something that you're thinking about. I'm doing this and then I'm doing that and then I'm looking there. And did I put my seatbelt on? Did I arrange the mirrors? Did I do everything properly? And then as you drive more and more, that becomes natural. Second nature. Imagine going back from that second nature to the way you used to look at the car when you learned how to drive. It would be, I think, 3 times the effort to kind of stick with it. And so that's kind of the feeling of people that are injured in a certain limb. They can't move it as much. So they're thinking about it. And people don't like thinking all day about one specific thing. So it's easier to just use the other side, whatever. If we kind of nudge people into using the side that's injured, that's favored, then they use it more, it becomes stronger, and it can get closer to second nature. That would be one effect. Another effect, and another way we're doing that is not just by showing them that the limb moves, but also we give them a report saying, this is where you started in your range of motion. Let's say in the beginning you moved 90 degrees, and then you added 2 or 3 degrees in the past month. There's no way you would perceive that from day to day or throughout that month by yourself. But if you get a report every day saying you've advanced by 1%, 2%, 3%.
It's so encouraging, isn't it?
So the second is making them stick with it, which is adherence to treatment. So that's the second effect. And the third, specifically with phantom pain, is there's some sort of signal to your brain from the limb that the limb is doing what the brain is asking it to do. And the pain is caused because of inability to get that signal back. And so once you give the brain a signal that the leg or the arm did what the brain asked it to do, and it got feedback, the pain shuts off. And so that's a third effect.
Because otherwise, I'm assuming medication would only be the other option for pain management?
Pain meds, yeah. And as I said, mirror therapy requires another limb. So if you don't have two legs, then you can't use that, then medication is your only out. Same if you can't move both legs. So
from that to the Princess Bride, Moon Snacks is a journey. I love the fact that with such intense work, you get to have something like The Princess Bride on the moon. And also, it's one of everybody's favorite movies. It's such a crowd pleaser that you're going to become very popular the more we populate the moon, that people are going to want to see that film. It's almost that time. Miriam, so sorry we're going to have to send you away, but you do get a book and a snack.
So I brought a show and tell. This is my book.
So Miri, right now, for folks who can't see it, is holding up like a massive tome that's blue.
Oh, wow. The dictionary.
I know it might be sound like a cop out, but there is something for those who love working with their hands. There's something cool going in and picking the letters and running through it. There are maps of the world. And the joke is you can't have a conversation with anyone because you're on the moon. But basically looking at the entire Earth learning everything about it, the way that people communicate, kind of having a record and not being there is something super ironic and interesting. And the real reason is it's short enough for me to read. I have the ADHD and dyslexia. I've always loved this specific volume. Every time I had a question about a word, my dad would send me here. If anyone from the family would travel anyway, I'd have to find it on the map here. So this specific dictionary.
I love that. Also, reference books always have the best smell.
So what's your snack?
It's a Valencia orange. I'm not big on sweets. And there's this orange, the type of orange is Valencia. My mom's side of the family had an orchard. And it's the tree that went from that orchard to my grandmother's house. And I wait for it all year. And no one likes it when it's sour and almost comes out. I'm the first one to jump on that tree. And there's something really cool about the experience of feeling an orange in space continuously. And you could probably do a bunch of stuff with it, right? You could do oil and build stuff, make clothing, whatever. Unlimited oranges.
That sounds so magic. And what a really beautiful family connection to an orange tree. I really love that. Endless oranges are yours. You could probably plant now an orchard on the moon.
Right, yeah.
Go for launch.
T-minus 30 seconds.
Roger, go.
Mary, thank you so much for joining us. This was a really, really wonderful session. I'm really sad to send you to the moon.
Crew one for all.
Along with endless oranges and that beautiful big dictionary.
Thanks, pressing for strawback retract.
I feel like if I bring my snack, we have like a triumvirate of the best snack. I'd bring dark chocolate.
T-minus 15 seconds.
Bye, Mary. Have a great time.
Great trip. Space.
Thanks. See you soon.
Enjoy that dictionary.
I will. Thanks a lot for sending me.
Stage one propulsion is nominal. Power and telemetry nominal. Vehicle supersonic.
Thanks, everyone, for joining Moon Snack.
Tremendous time with Miri and with Jessica, as always, and we'll be seeing you again shortly.
Moon Snacks is sponsored by Highlands and Islands Enterprise and Light Dark Light, with hosts Jessica Fox and Ed Hoffman, and special guest Miri Berger. It was produced, edited, and original music by me, Ben Please.
Highlands and Islands Enterprise is the economic and community development agency for the north and west of Scotland. If you're interested in seeing how we can help you, contact us at hie.co.uk.